But needs
that's
to be
not
fulfilled.
Marxist. That's not.
But it is.
Hey, it's 2005. Could mean several things, but in this case, it means it's Series 2, Episode 7. We're back.
It is. Yes. We're back.
Happy New Year. I'm Matthew Revel.
You're very fucking loud as well.
He's Matthew Revel. Who are you?
Uncle Bald.
Uncle Bald. What's your
real
name?
Not Uncle. On call.
Yeah. And are you on call today?
Actually, I am, which is rather disappointing.
And are you bald today? On call.
Not as bald as normal, he needs a shave.
So you are like on call
and bald.
Jono, what's your name?
My name's Jono. Jono Bacon.
And, so are you ginger today?
Yeah.
And you're a twat.
For anyone who isn't in the studio, I just want to point out that Ginger Ack has a new hairdo, which is great.
Yeah, it's a sort of... Well, I don't think it's a new hairdo, is it? I think it's just I haven't done my hair.
I don't want to disappoint you on this, but my hairdo looks like this about every 4 months when I get it cut.
I like it like
leave
that.
Leave it alone for four months.
Oh, because you went at the lug, so you didn't see his haircut.
Yeah,
it was. I couldn't see... I can see your hairdo now because just over your belly, which is incidentally enormously large and hanging out over your belt.
Just out of interest, everyone, I just thought I'd like to know that we're doing Lug Radio.
Oh, yes.
I knew I was here for something.
Yes. So what are we talking about today, guys?
Well, let's talk to some interesting people.
Talk to people,
and there's loads of news. I mean, you know, IBM and the patent thing, and Sun did a thing, and
Apple. Let's talk to someone. Let's interview someone.
Yes.
Yeah.
We'll interview someone interesting, but we won't say it is.
In a mysterious way.
Should we all rub our beards?
We are actually
rubbing our beards now, listeners.
Do you want a load aid of toothpicks so we can rub his fucking beard?
You need a magnifying glass to see yours.
Beard.
No, so,
it's perfectly fine on a tactile basis.
I
never want to find out.
Let's. Did you guys have a nice Christmas?
I did, lovely, thanks. I went to the in-laws and I had Christmas dinner on Christmas Day and Christmas dinner on Boxing Day.
Fantastic.
As did I.
What did the big, fat, red bastard bring you this year?
Well...
Satan. Oh, Santa. Right.
No, I got a new coat.
Came past, waved at you and went on again.
That's right, yeah.
So. I got a new coat.
Eh?
I've got a new coat.
You got a new coat?
New coat.
Was
it replacing your vicar jacket?
No. It's a replacement for the winter times when it's too cold for the vicar jacket.
Is it a vicar coat?
Do you acknowledge that your vicar jacket does look like a vicar jacket?
Yeah, of course I do. That's why I bought it.
But you think that's cool?
In a completely uncool, vicar
kind of way.
Don't vicars actually listen to this show? Didn't we have one right in?
Well, we've got Milbra, who's I can't remember your real name, but he's an evangelical pastor from Birmingham.
He's some pasta.
Yeah, he's
he's not a paster.
He's a bit fusilli.
I hope he doesn't write to the BBC and try and ban us. No, sorry, only joking, mate.
Is he film pasta?
So, yeah. Anyway, Matt.
So, yeah, he wrote in and just said, hi, he really appreciated our show.
Oh, right.
Because it gave him a chance to listen to other people who have thought around the issues of open source maybe a bit more than he has because he's new to it. And he really enjoyed the fact that he could be part of a community. Because he can't get along to his local lug, unfortunately.
Right.
So I've invited him to ours.
Yep.
And he seemed like a cool bloke. So
welcome to the community, vicar.
Yep.
Welcome to all the pastors out there.
More tea.
Yes.
Is there any? I mean, I envisage people who are listen to Lug Radio as being the
swearing boozy gits,
the stereotypical probably white male geeks, right? And there's obviously women involved and people from ethnic communities involved.
There are women involved.
Yes,
bollocks.
Of course there are.
They haven't got bollocks. They're women.
Yeah. So, but we want to hear from people who aren't within this typical stereotype.
Well, funny you should mention that.
Pastor listens to.
Funny you should mention that because Schwack, our mate Schwack,
we like Schwack. Yeah. Hello, Schwack.
Hi,
Schwack.
Who's had some problems with because he's up in.
Is that the Northwest?
No!
Because he's up in Jennifer Lopez.
He's up in the Northwest of England at the moment, so.
He's up Jennifer Lopez.
He's having some difficulties with the slugs at the moment.
Yeah.
So.
He is Cumbria Lug, isn't he, on his own?
Pretty much.
Him and Russ and Jenna.
And a few other people from us Patreon.
Our thoughts are with you up in Cumbria.
Schwack was mentioning that some guy called Darren Griffith, some young guy from Beijing.
Wasn't he the guy who did the kids' programmes?
I don't know. No, wasn't that
Gary Glitter?
Anyway, so
you look like Mallet's Mallet.
Darren Griffith. Darren Griffin.
Hang on, do I look like Timmy? I do look like the mallet.
Oh, John Luke can be the mallet.
For all listeners mallet. Who didn't watch children's TV from 1982 to 1986,
you poor bastards.
Yeah, you've just missed out on a reference there. But anyway,
Darren Griffin
from Beijing. Yeah, I think he's Canadian. Darren Griffin.
Well, he can't help Beijing. That, can he?
Make your mind.
But he lives in Beijing, and I think the trouble is they just won't let him oot. he's got in touch, and I'm surprised that we get through the censors there. So well done to China for enjoying us.
That's really good.
They banned Google, but they did not ban Lug Radio. No.
Hang on. Ni hao ma, wo hen hao. That's the some kind
the
of.
Would you like to come back to my place that? And see my puppy?
No, it's like. China. How are you? I'm fine. Whoa, hen ho.
Do you have to say it in the own kind of loud lizard awful?
You do. You
just
do.
Say it again.
Whoa, hen ho.
You know what it sounds like? It sounds like woe to you, earth and sea, for the devil speaks his beast with rest. For he knows that time is short.
Let him who hath understanding reckon the number of the beast. Or it is a
excuse
human
me,
number.
What's this?
Iron Maiden number of the beast.
666.
Anyway, this is Lug Radio.
That's Number of the Beast by Iron Maiden.
So, should we get on with
no,
it? Reading from Revelation. Thank you for people getting in touch with us.
Yeah, please do more. We will read the email.
Show at lugradio.org.
Not that we've checked it for a while, because we've had some technical difficulties.
We're shit, aren't we? That's why.
We know nothing about computers in all honesty. Let's get on with it. Time is running short and there's many things to do.
The gnat's hair of time is approaching the... shut up.
The testicle of insanity.
The left one or the right one?
It doesn't matter with Matt.
Ah, he can choose.
So, we've interviewed a few people over the last 6 months or so, and we get the impression that some of our listeners quite like the fact that we're introducing people who you may not have heard of, you may not have... come across during reading about Linux or whatever. So, in this episode, we'll be interviewing Mark Shuttleworth from Canonical.
All right, Mark. Thank you very much for joining us today. As you know, this interview really is kind of about the marketing side of Ubuntu. So, will you be able to start off by telling us what marketing means to the Ubuntu project?
Well, we're not approaching this as from a sort of corporate point of view. What we're really trying to do is see whether or not the fundamental values of the Ubuntu community resonate with the open source community. And so we focus very much on the technical platform because I think technical excellence is one of the sort of hallmarks of a good open source project and a good open source community. And we're focusing very heavily on the community aspects. So the way we organize ourselves, the way we distribute Ubuntu, the way we encourage and support people to change it. And those aren't really marketing efforts, but they're positioning efforts. They're saying, this is what we're all about. And then my hope is that if those ideas resonate with the open source community, we'll move to the center.
Right, fantastic.
It seems quite interesting, Mark, that when I heard about Ubuntu, like many people, when it was kind of quite an underground thing, and there's a few rumblings about it here and there.
Yeah, SSDS.
It seems to, at the moment, there seems to be no massive hype attached to it. People seem to be using it because they've heard that it's a technically good system. Do you plan to go down the same route as many of the other Linux distributors and hype it as much as possible, or are you going to try and remain as it is?
Not. I think the way this is going to pan out is people will converge on something that works for them. And so my focus is very much on making Ubuntu something that works for people. And when you look at the structure of our team, it's very, very technically oriented. We don't have a significant, we don't have any real presence on the team that takes a traditional sort of marketing approach. I think open source is a phenomenal phenomenon, but it's not a phenomenon that one should approach the way you would any sort of consumer product.
Yeah.
The audience, the market, the users are just not that interested in that approach. And so for Ubuntu, I think we wanted to take a completely different approach. Now, I would imagine that some people will take Ubuntu, jazz it up, add, if they wanted to, they would add proprietary software and so on, and produce high gloss, as it were, commercial products that they might hype.
Yeah.
But those probably wouldn't carry the Ubuntu brand at all, and we're not going to do that ourselves.
Right.
But I hope that we sort of start building a family of distributions that are derivatives, that share code, that share work, but which themselves potentially take a different approach to identifying their core users and marketing to them.
So who do you see as the core Ubuntu users then? I mean, is it almost like a meta distribution where you provide the platform for other distributions, or do you see there being direct end users who are important to the project?
We do already have a very strong community, and even with derivative distributions, there's a tremendous amount of cross-talk and cross-flow and the sharing of ideas effectively. So I think derivative distributions and derived works are really important, not just to distributions, but to the whole open source process. I think that's been sort of borne out when we see that, you know, a web server like Apache gets stronger when other people take it, rebrand it, add to it, you know, effectively invest some of their corporate or community culture in the product.
Yeah.
I think we'll see the same thing happening with Ubuntu.
Sorry, Johnny.
I was just going to say, at the moment, this is kind of related to the marketing angle, but it seems like Canonical is basically a bottomless pit of cash at the moment. I don't want to dwell too much on the fact that you're obviously filthy rich, Mark, and we're both very jealous.
Disgustingly so.
But in terms of how much funding you've got, what is your focus on where you're going to spend this? Is it going to be mainly spending it on employing the cream of the crop as you've done so far?
That's the primary focus. There is a sort of pain threshold which I won't cross, in the sense that I'm quite comfortable spending a certain amount of money to employ, you know, the very best team to focus on the work. But I fully appreciate that if your game plan is never ever to charge for software, then you have to keep costs quite tightly under control.
Yeah.
So while I may be sort of disgustingly wealthy and have been very fortunate in the past, I'm also conscious of the fact that if we blow a lot of cash now, we greatly reduce our chances of becoming sustainable, because the revenue opportunities are always going to be somewhat indirect. And so, we have picked up a phenomenal team, and that team like that is not cheap.
Yeah.
But in the bigger picture, we're also running a very, very lean operation.
Do you think that it is sustainable, though? Because obviously we're going through the honeymoon period at the moment where, I mean, as an example, I was chatting to Jeff Waugh, and he was sort of saying how if a device isn't supported in Ubuntu, then submit it as a bug, because it's a bug. And I did that about a wireless card, and it was fixed and implemented in 2 weeks,
right,
which was incredible. Do you think this can be sustainable, so a year, 2 years, 3 years down the line, people are still going to be as responsive and reactive to the community?
One of the advantages that we have is that we've said we will focus our core team on regular releases. And what that means is that there's a limit to the amount of stabilization and testing that we are able to do, simply because we're forced into a 6-month release cycle, which means that our team is focused on the head effectively. We're much closer to the head of development than Red Hat or SUSE is ever going to be, because they have a different definition of, you know, what they would consider a good release.
Yeah.
And so I think we will certainly be able to keep up with the current head of open source development. In terms of breadth, a lot of our ability to scale is going to depend on how quickly we can build a good community.
Right.
And really, that's just a question of being there and seeing who else comes along. The indications are phenomenal, though. We're constantly taking on new requests for new maintainers.
Mm.
We're trying to structure a process which is welcoming and supportive, even to folks who have not yet proven themselves, but, you know, which demonstrate a willingness to participate, and to participate with the right values and the right approach.
Yeah.
And if we can grow that community, then yes, I think we can. We can stay right at the head. In particular, if we can become known, as I think we will, as the distribution for upstream guys to participate in, the best distribution to showcase your own tools, your own software, your own platform, then I think we can really grow the team dramatically.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Mark, what role do you think Lugs and kind of grassroots sort of advocacy play in the promotion of Ubuntu? Is that pretty much central to the way that you see Ubuntu being promoted?
Absolutely. I mean, as I said, we don't have a formal marketing program. We're not going to be buying newspaper ads and approaching this, you know, in a classical marketing sense. Mm. The community that we very much hope to be a part of, to share with, is the open source community, and that is best defined from an advocacy point of view and from a growth point of view through LUGs, through volunteer efforts, through individuals. It's extraordinary if you I think if you were to look back at this time in history in 10 years' time, you'll say that this was a time of real change in the software industry, and that doesn't happen very often. And that change is being driven by individuals more than by organizations or by sort of marketing budgets.
So what role do you think there is then for the traditional or for the more traditional distributions who are combining commercialism with the grassroots side of things? You know, you've got, say, Red Hat's the typical example, who are trying to build a community through Fedora, but at the same time they're hoping to make big bucks through selling licenses and through the more traditionally commercial approach.
I'm never a fan of sort of balancing opposing ideas. It's very difficult to do. And if you look at the space shuttle, right, it was designed to do too many different things. As a result, it's too big, too cumbersome, and too dangerous. What works best in life is to have something that has a clear idea of what it wants to be and then runs at that. I think if you try and define yourself as someone who's trying to sell free software and then at the same time want to, you know, build an open source community, you have sort of deep philosophical divides within your organization that are always going to be difficult to bridge. You know, the community-oriented guys are going to be saying use Fedora, and the marketing guys are going to be saying use Red Hat Enterprise. Mm. And it's just very difficult to cross that divide. And that's why, you know, I set out with Ubuntu saying we will define ourselves as a non-commercial entity in the sense that we will never, ever charge for free software.
In terms of your involvement with Ubuntu, I mean, if anyone is to go along to the Ubuntu mailing lists and have a browse round or read Ubuntu traffic, obviously you do take part in the discussions, which is an admirable thing in itself, and because I'm guessing that not many people in your position in competitive companies are so involved in the process. But where does your involvement with the technical decisions with Ubuntu begin, and where does it end?
I sit on the technical board, but I, you know, recognize that there are people who are far better qualified than me to make some of these decisions. Where I push very hard is in terms of having a clear idea of what the end product should look like. So, you know, I'm a big fan of simplicity.
Yeah.
A big fan of openness and the ability to recognize that other people may want to do something differently. And so I'll derive ideas that I think will stimulate the Ubuntu community in those sorts of ways. That's why, you know, I'm a really big fan of the Kubuntu movement.
Mm.
So we picked GNOME, but I recognize that there are a lot of people out there who love KDE. And so I'm working as hard as I can to encourage the KDE community to do their own version of Ubuntu.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to be a reality for Hori, which is our next release in April.
That's right.
And that's fantastic. So that's the area where I'll sort of really drive. The deep black magic foo I leave to Matt Zimmerman, Colin Watson, and James Troopenser. Mm. They are they're a superb team, and I feel like I have to paddle very, very fast to keep up.
Mark, just on the kind of the business side of things, I mean, I think all of us in LugRadio use Ubuntu, and we find it, you know, it's the best distribution for what we want to do. But I think a question that many of us want to know the answer to is, if you're never going to charge for it, and you know you're putting all this money in, how do you see Ubuntu turning into a self-sustaining, self-funding project?
Okay, the first side of that is sustainability is matching revenues and expenses, and so we have to keep the expenses as tight as possible. Now, it's not cheap to hire a fantastic team, keep them focused, keep them, you know, interested in the project. But at the same time, we don't have a lot of the fat of a large corporation. We certainly don't have a lot of the excess of the sort of dot-com bubble years. And I'm pretty, you know, if you talk to the guys, they'll tell you, you know, we stay in cheap hotels, we fly economy, and everybody sort of shares rooms at our conferences.
Mm.
It's very much a cost-conscious focus. And the aim of that is to make it to maximize our chances of getting to sustainability. That's the first thing. The next thing is that a lot of this really has to do with gaining a critical mass of users. I really do believe that if we have widespread adoption, even if that's widespread adoption, you know, not specifically of Ubuntu, but of one of the Ubuntu-related products or derivative distributions, that in that critical mass of users, we will be able to generate revenue without charging for the software and without doing offensive stuff like, you know, forcing particular software choices on people or you know, fighting over preferences of particular media streamers and so on.
Hmm.
And now, clearly that is defining our role as being substantially more limited than the way Microsoft would like to define their role. So we have no, I just don't believe that there will ever be another Microsoft, and I think that anybody who starts a business now with that as an end goal is barking up completely the wrong tree. But that doesn't mean we can't, you know, play a highly professional role, charge good rates for professional services to people who need very specialized support and want to get it from, you know, the people who produce the actual platform itself.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, we're going to have to pretty much wrap things up. I mean, first of all, let me, on behalf of all of the Lug Radio listeners, thank you for taking the time to sit and talk to us. But before you go, there's one question which I think everybody wants to ask. What's it like being in space?
It's everything that you might imagine, and quite a bit more. It's a combination of, you know, of moments of terror, moments of absolute bliss, moments of, I won't say ever moments of boredom, but I think if you were up there for 6 months, you would certainly have times when you were very ready to come home. So
I'm assuming you went on that machine as well that we kind of see in documentaries and films where you spin around really fast and your face kind of goes all rubbery. Was that
the case? That's quite an extraordinary experience. The very big one at Star City draws more electricity than the rest of Star City combined.
My God.
It'll sort of drive your chin through your chest. Quite an incredible experience.
Well, just one final question from me, if that's all right. You mentioned in the shuttle earlier. Mm-hmm. I was just wondering, when you went into space, did you actually find out how much a shuttle's worth? Sorry.
are you interested in buying one, Matt?
No. I reckon there'll be museum pieces pretty soon. So. I don't think there's much of a future for the shuttle. The sooner they retire it and build something that looks more like a Soyuz, the better for everybody.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Mark. It's been great talking to you.
All right. Stay
well.
Thank
you.
You too. Cheers.
Cheers.
Fucking Mark Shuttleworth. How cool was that?
Yeah, and also he sounded like a decent chap.
He does.
That was very interesting, I have to say. Before that...
now you want to talk.
Oh,
when we're talking about introducing the segment, you've just looked at us and looked bald.
You looked at us baldly.
Hey, tell someone, who cares?
So, talk.
Okay, I was going to say, before that interview, I could really sort of take or leave Ubuntu, wasn't really particularly bothered, but now I'm really interested in it. And I'm interested in it because Mark seems to be wanting to build a company or to build success on a product that's just technically good. He didn't seem particularly bothered on the marketing side. And this is what I believe the way products should be marketed is not at all. I believe that they should be through word of mouth. If something is good, then it should be successful through word of mouth.
Right.
And it seemed that he was more interested in it being technically good rather than producing a load of pamphlets and posting them around.
Matt
responds on behalf of the whole world of marketing.
I don't strictly disagree, actually. I mean,
you don't?
No, I don't.
Well, okay.
What I disagree with, perhaps, is your definition of marketing, which is fair enough because everyone has this idea that marketing is strictly...
I'll be the first to admit I don't know a great deal about marketing.
No, and a lot of it is gumph. Shut up. A lot of it is gumph people try to make more of it than it really is. But,
yeah, exactly, yeah.
But to be honest with you, it is more than just advertising. Genuinely, it is. It is about trying to find out what people want and trying to deliver it to them, which is what open source is all about a lot of the time. And I think from what Mark was saying in the interview, that is what Ubuntu is about. It's about creating something that solves people's software needs in a really technical, excellent way without ripping anyone off and without screwing people over.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, just a sec, to me, what, to you, to me, open source software is about employing marketing perhaps in its purest, unbastardly form, which is taking what people want and giving it to them in a way that suits them best. Now, you could say that's a broad definition of marketing, but that is the sort of definition that academic business you know, doctors and all that, professors would actually give to marketing. As we understand it in the everyday world, it's about making leaflets and coming up with snappy slogans. And
but do you think that's the problem? I mean, the only question that Mark seemed to be a little hazy about, I think he pretty much answered everything pretty much on the dot, and he's one of the few people I've ever interviewed that's actually answered the questions.
Yeah.
But the one question he seemed a little unsure of was the one about how are you going to make money?
How are you going to make money?
Now, well, if he told you that, but then you'd be a millionaire.
No. I think the thing about it, my view is there's two issues with what you're saying, Matt. First of all, Aid, I kind of with Aid on this. I'm in the middle in the sense of I do believe marketing's got a place. But I think the problem,
being as your job is marketing open source every day, let's just not forget that.
Well,
It is, Johnno.
Well, I think there's a difference between marketing and consultancy. Marketing.
Well, consultancy is just like a general term for anything, really, isn't it?
But surely marketing is blanket consultancy.
Sorry, I don't understand.
Well, marketing surely is basically generalising a message and pumping out to a lot of people, whereas consultancy is dealing with specific problems.
No, I mean that would be one type of marketing, certainly. But anyway, let's not get bogged down in that.
The thing I was going to say was the fact that I think the problem with a lot of marketing people is that they are involved too early in the process. So they get involved in the process when the product either doesn't exist or isn't matured yet. The thing with Shuttleworth and his team of cohorts is I believe that they are getting Ubuntu to a point where it is so technically perfect that then they're ready to really push the marketing.
Okay, all right.
I don't think he's even interested in marketing it. I think he'll build something that's technically brilliant and let it spread by word of mouth.
Google. That's exactly what Google did.
Answer me this.
Exactly, yeah.
How does the Ubuntu team know what is technically good, not just what's technically good, but how do they know what needs to go into Ubuntu?
That's knowledge.
That's research. Research.
If I were to summarise what I think Matt's saying, we're of the opinion, I think the three of us are, this is Jono and Aidan, myself, are firmly of the opinion that the Ubuntu people are not planning on doing what we'd consider to be marketing, which is giving out pamphlets and throwing drinks receptions and stuff. They're going to let people talk about it by word of mouth and so on. I think what Matt's saying is that is marketing.
It is.
It's just, you know, what we consider to be marketing is probably what a PhD person in marketing would consider advertising. But yeah, the fact that they're not doing, I don't know whether you want two different words for it. You want kind of, you know, theoretical marketing and the way marketing actually works in businesses. And Ubuntu are not doing the way marketing works in businesses currently with, you know,
people on
£90,000 a year and bloody throwing drinks receptions the whole time and putting up stupid things on the side of buses and stuff. And it's fucking brilliant that they're not doing that.
It is.
But it's interesting that we've just all listened to that interview and probably three of us have thought, brilliant, Mark doesn't give a shit about marketing, and you've actually...
I thought, brilliant, Mark does give a shit about marketing.
Yeah, so that's really interesting.
But not the stuff about marketing that is the crap. Ubuntu doesn't need to do... PR schmoozy things like throwing drinks receptions, but it does need to look at the way that what people need
but
needs
that's
to be
not
fulfilled.
That's not
but
Mark.
It is.
Oh, Jesus.
It is.
Shouty.
Jesus.
The thing is, bear
with me. Shall we agree that we have a different definition of what the word marketing means?
Yes.
So when Matt talks about marketing, we can't say that's not marketing, because that's not what we understand to be marketing.
Yeah, and I don't think we're really qualified to say what marketing is.
And Matt understands what that stuff is, and then we can move on.
But then again, the issue of this is, it's the same problem with the term hacker and cracker, right?
Pretty much.
People always rant and rave about how hacker is... a real hacker is a program and all the rest of it. Now, if the problem is the fact that marketing's been so unclearly defined, I don't think it is. I think that people who are involved with marketing have different interpretations of marketing. I don't think finding out what people want is marketing. Finding out what people want is research.
I totally agree with
marketing,
that.
Marketing is about taking an existing product and ensuring that you can make people know about that product and get it to the masses in the most efficient way possible. Surely that's what marketing is.
There is just no two ways of saying it. I'm going to use one of Ack's favourite phrases. You're wrong. And I don't think we should dwell on this, but you're just wrong. What you were saying before all of this was quite interesting. You were saying that Mark Shuttleworth was evading a question slightly, you felt.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that a bit more, because that's actually related to something that I'm quite interested in, because
I can understand why Mark wouldn't want to tell us his business model. quite comfortable with that.
You see, there's two possibilities here. Either he's got a really clever business model and he doesn't want to let on because then we'll steal his idea, or everyone will steal his idea, or it won't work because people know about it. Or, just possibly, he hasn't got a fucking clue how it's going to make money, but first of all, he doesn't care because he's got 300 million quid to bank.
I knew you'd have to get that in.
And secondly, maybe a good idea will come up in the next 12 months. He's in no big rush to
And
come
he's
up
just
with
really enjoying what he's doing.
He's doing it. It's not as if he has to start it making money tomorrow. I mean, when he was talking about how they want to keep their expenses low, absolutely. It always really pisses me off that, you know, companies will start up and they'll get this really massive flashy office and print up loads of paper and shit like that for their company, when it's just bollocks. You know, they waste a load of money and they haven't got any. He's approaching it where they keep their expenses low. When they want to fly people places, then they go economy and shit like that. So they're not spending much money, but they are spending some money and they're not making any. So every pound they spend is a pound they're not fucking getting back. And when we said, how are you going to make money? He went, we'll make money. There will be a revenue stream, we're sure of it. Professional services. Yeah. It sounds to me like fucking pornography or something like that. But, you know.
Not that it in any way will be that. We'd just like to make
just to be clear, in case the man with all the money in the world decides to sue us, we don't actually think he's going to be selling pornography.
Here's the thing, though.
Loved it when he said he was disgustingly wealthy.
It's brilliant.
That's quality.
Some of us have a garden that we potter around in. I don't, but some people do potter around in a garden.
Freaks.
or do something like that, don't they? And they tend to their dahlias and everything. Maybe Mark Shuttleworth sees Ubuntu as his garden.
No. You see, I'm going to use two words that he uses quite often now. You're wrong.
Okay.
I've
got the humility to admit it.
I spoke to...
Touché.
Ooh, glass of milk for table five.
Have you just had a little nap, by the way? You seem quite awake.
The thing is, I spoke to Jane, I think it was, at Canonical.
Right.
And she...
Jane
I think it's Jane Silber.
Did she sound fit?
I think it was... I can't remember. I think it was Jane. But I spoke to someone at Canonical, and basically, everybody at Canonical seems to be saying that Mark Shuttleworth is 100% behind Ubuntu, and that is
his
main thing. Because my assumption was, to be honest, I thought the same thing. I thought that he was basically, he's a millionaire, he's got a lot of money, and he's thrown it somewhere where it can make a lot of difference in a cause that he sympathises with.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I think that Mark Shuttleworth demonstrated that technical capability is incredibly important to him. Mm. He's got his finger on the pulse, and the same pulse, that's the reason why it wouldn't surprise me if he personally picked the names of the people that he's employed.
Oh, I should think he did.
If he did, I know that he probably said, I want the best installer guy, I want the best this guy. We've heard those stories, but it wouldn't surprise me if he said he wanted Colin Watson, Jeff Ward, all these guys.
Yeah.
But with that in mind, I don't believe necessarily agree with Aid in the sense that if we knew his business model, we'd all be millionaires. I don't think there's a secret to be a millionaire. You've got to be successful.
You've got to work very hard.
You've got to work hard. Yeah. But the thing is...
that would be a tautology. In order to be successful, you must be successful. You are so wise. Tell us another nugget of business knowledge, Jono.
But the thing is...
I must rush to you for consulting.
The thing is...
Knob-end.
I think he was expecting that we wanted... an answer from him that was going to give this enlightening business model where he's going to make all this money. And I don't know
if it's occurred to anybody that maybe he doesn't even care. You know, I think he's just enjoying what he's doing.
One thing he did say, that though, once it obtains a critical mass, whether it's through Ubuntu or something that's built on top of Ubuntu, he felt that it would become self-sustaining.
Yeah, that's quite interesting. Yeah, he said,
what does that mean?
Once there's a critical mass, it will generate a revenue stream, or a revenue stream will be available. So he obviously sees that when you've got a lot of people using it, some of them will be prepared to pay money for something, and some of those people will be paying money to Canonical.
Now, I don't believe it's going to be Ubuntu hats or something like that, though.
No, I don't think it is, and I don't think it, you know, it's not Cafe Press. Mm. I think importantly, I mean, we've harped on a bit about the thing that he said we didn't want to, we don't know where they're going to get the money from, but everything else he said, like Jonathan said, was right on the fucking nose.
Yeah,
so
it was.
Going,
spot
the man
on.
Speaks nout but sense.
It's really, really refreshing
a business
as well.
Guy,
yeah.
You know, say all the things that the way I think a business should work.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
I mean, I wish I had 300 million quid so I could finance a business and say, "Look, it'll work."
But then again, that's the point, isn't it? I mean, in many ways, we're so fortunate in the fact that most businesses start out with their ambitions and go in the way they believe it should go, and then when they realise they've got a massive payroll that they've got to sort out every month, that they have to go go essentially, I know it sounds horrible, go the Red Hat way, where they're basically...
Ooh,
you have,
I know it sounds really harsh.
That's a bit harsh.
But that's my personal view, is the fact that Red Hat...
Your personal unbiased opinion.
Rabidly biased opinion, but I agree with you. You've got to compromise in order to put food on your table.
Yeah, I'm not saying that's a bad thing for Red Hat to do that, because they're a business. But with Shuttleworth having all the money in the world anyway... That's not too much of a problem. So.
He's got the luxury that he can say, this is how I believe genuinely a business should be run, and then he can do it. And if it doesn't make money in the first 6 months, it doesn't matter. Everyone else have to go, it's not making money, so we've got to diverge from our principles.
Yeah,
because
most
our principles are not funding us enough. You've got to get over the initial hump.
Yeah, most businesses don't have the luxury of that little cushion.
No businesses have the luxury of that.
So thanks very much for Mark Shuttleworth.
Thanks for Ubuntu Shuttleworth.
And for your interview. Cheers.
Okay, recently there's been some discussion on the interweb that Sun...
Stop calling it the fucking interweb.
Why?
Because it's really annoying. Because you got a few
you could call
started,
it Tinternet.
A few people started taking the piss, right, and saying, oh, we'll call it the interweb because then we're taking the mickey out of stupid people. Don't we know what they're talking about? And then everyone started going...
Bear with us, folks.
Oh, isn't it very ironic?
/.
Now it's just
rant.
Really fucking annoying. It's like deliberately spelling the as T-E-A.
My nan calls it the intellect.
The intellect?
Something like that. She's 92, though. I think he's on the intellect.
Are you finished?
I am now.
Okay, thank you. So, recently on the interweb...
Stop!
Dart interweb.
Well, there's been a time loop.
Right, so on the...
it's Groundhog Day.
On the network-connected resource that we know as the internet...
Thank you. ...web. You've done that every time now.
We've heard some rumblings recently from Sun... that they are going to open source something important. They said it's not going to be Java, and as Solaris is going to be open sourced anyway, that's both of the important products out of the way. So,
what's left?
What do we think it's going to be?
It's Project
We can't be Looking Glass, have done that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we know why they did that.
I think, actually, what's going to happen is everyone's going to go, what was the big open source product? You know, what was the product you open sourced? They're going to go, April Fool, it was Solaris!
No, it'll be the Planet. The web server the web server software.
iPlanet.
Nobody wants
that. Does anybody
that.
Use it anymore?
Nobody wants it, exactly. So if you open source it, they'll think, well, okay, what? We've got a nice ready made developer base for it now.
That's bollocks. It's like open sourcing Gem.
Yeah, okay. But the way people think is, you know, we'll just ditch it because, you know, we haven't got, nobody wants
it
to pay
for
it.
Why don't Apple complain that they called it iPlanet?
Because they had it first.
A long time before, yeah.
Yeah, iPlanet was...
So why didn't Sun complain to Apple then?
One of the first web servers you could get. Why didn't Sun complain to Apple? Mm. Because they didn't have any kind of scheme of having things called iSomething. You know, I mean, if they'd have had iPlanet
I've just seen
and
that thing over
else.
There called iSight.
Yep, it's wank.
What else does Sun do, though, apart from Java and Solaris, that they could open source?
Vitamin D.
Hardware.
What's that?
Not the Sun.
Oh, right.
They can't open source hardware, really.
No, they can't. No, they can't. But that's the only other thing they
can. Maybe they've got, like, maybe the BIOS.
So, do any of us know what they're actually going to...
No.
Oh, right. Nobody knows. It's a big mystery. They've announced it because they're desperate for PR. That might be a bit unfortunate or a bit...
Yeah. Email us at show@logradio if you can guess what it is.
I blame their marketing department.
Well, actually, on the other hand, though, if you know what it is, don't tell us in case we go to jail like all the people who leaked the Mac stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but... You know.
We don't know what it is, just for the record.
Yeah, but, and if we did, we wouldn't say...
Even though we're all writing it down on a big blackboard. We're not.
We're going to put it on the laser display board.
Yeah. Talking of Macs, have you seen the new Mac that's coming out? The little one that's about
Mac
as big as
Mini.
You say that, because you love Macs, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah, I saw it and I instantly vomited.
Apple have released the iPod Knuckle Shuffle.
Yeah, the iPod
Looks
Shuffle...
Looks like a dick. Costs 100 quid.
69. Yeah, appropriately.
Defence rest, your honour.
I think it's naff. I think they haven't even bothered putting a screen on it.
What is it?
It's basically it's a 512 meg solid state.
I thought it was a gig.
MP3 player. There's a gig version.
Oh, right, I think we're talking about different things here.
Well, I'm talking about the desktop.
We're talking about the Mac Mini, which we'll get on to.
Yeah, okay. So it's basically a USB pen drive with DRM built into it.
Because we love the DRM.
It hasn't got,
we do love DRM, yes.
It hasn't even got a screen on it. They say that it's designed so you just put some songs on it and then stick it on the shuffle and it'll automatically just randomly play.
Put some songs on it and then have a shuffle.
Now, I thought the whole point of the iPod was to have like 40 gig of storage, but hey. Anyway, so going on to... So I think that's rubbish, really.
I think they're quite cool. I just don't think it's worth anything like 69 fucking pounds.
Not when you can get one for 29 quid from
TJ Hughes.
Nothing
Apple does is cool. Nothing.
But the thing is, though, is that here again is the whole... a lot of people seem to debate whether they should get an iRiver or an iPod. We've discussed this quite a lot at Lug Meetings, and the general consensus is that the iRiver generally can do a lot more and is actually quite a lot better.
Oh, but don't forget, the iPod looks
but
nice.
But the iPod looks nice. Yeah, iPod's it's a designer really item for the, you know.
I'm not a big fan of the whole kind of design over functionality argument.
So it'll be shiny. Interesting to see. So, hey, tell our Lug Radio listeners about the Mac Mini thing.
No.
You actually look genuinely displeased. You look like someone shot you in the leg and bitten your arm.
Look at it.
Let me tell you what it is. It's basically, from what I've read today on the Ubuntu,
it's an underpowered desktop that's about the size of a CD-ROM and it's got an Apple on the top of it. So millions of people will buy it.
For the price, it's not too bad.
What is it?
It's 1.3 gigahertz.
Yeah, but...
Or is it 1.21 gigawatts?
But it's $499.
Right, it's £339. It's 1.25 gigahertz. Or gigahertz, sorry. Which is...
it's not enough for time travel, is it?
Which apparently equates, I'm told, this is just what I'm told, equates to roughly twice... if you double it, that's what it would be in Intel
don't
terms.
Don't believe that for a second.
Twice as if it's more. You can get away with a lower powered PPC machine.
Not that much.
But not that much. Now, I mean, if it's 1.25 gigahertz, then I'd say it's about 1.8.
Why are we calling it gigahertz?
Because you
say
gigawatts, it's like the dock out of Back to the Future.
So if you put one in the back of your car and drive at 88 miles an hour.
Then you'll go back in time to the time when Apple made good stuff.
Oh, no, that's a brilliant plan.
Yeah. That'd be great.
But yeah, basically...
But we can take Ubuntu back with us. It won't run on any of the desktops.
Inside, it's an iBook, apparently. So this the guys on the Ubuntu website reckon that Ubuntu will run on it, just in case anyone's...
They've got this wrong, though, haven't they? Because the thing is, it's about, what, it's about 350 quid, something like that?
339, yeah.
Right, okay. Well,
but that doesn't include anything useful.
No, it's just the unit. So you need a keyboard, you need a mouse, you need a monitor.
Yeah.
Right, and... maybe a modem. I don't know if there's a network.
It's got a modem, it's got a network, but it hasn't got Wi-Fi or Bluetooth. Right. Wi-Fi is like 90 quid.
Well, the problem here is the fact that I could go out and buy a Dell PC with a flat screen for 350, 400 quid.
No, you can.
Yes, you can, mate, you can.
There was an advert on the telly the other night for one.
On the what?
On the telly.
It's one of them.
You
I don't know, I get on one used by RSS.
But enough of your limp wrist problems.
So that's the problem. Why didn't they... if they flogged it for, like, 200 quid... Then they'd sew the place up. It'd be brilliant. It would be brilliant.
Do you remember Austin, who was on the show?
People are buying
Austin
looks
Macro
nice.
Looks like Dewey from Big Brother Malcolm in the Middle.
He said to me, "I said, but you know, I don't see really how anyone apart from you, people who are just Apple enthusiasts, Electrics. Are going to go for it." He said, "But
are you an Apple enthusiast?
Me, I'm not. I'm saying him.
Oh right, okay."
And he said, "I think that people who've got a PC and." An iPod will buy this. He says 50% of them will buy it. I said, no. No, they won't.
No, to be fair, it is going for the iPod consumers. It's going for people who want something that looks nice to plug in, basically.
But I can't understand why these people haven't already got a computer. But
only people who are going to buy it are people in orange sunglasses.
Sunglasses and kilts.
I mean, I'd get one as a media machine or something like that to sit next to my TV.
But it's not designed to be a media machine.
Exactly. It hasn't even got an audio in slot socket.
But that's the problem, isn't it? The fact that they seem to be going for the iPod-ish kind of consumer market, which is understandable because they're more of a consumer company in many ways now.
Yep, fine. Yeah.
But the problem is they've done a half-assed way of doing it. If they
don't forget, it looks nice.
How much would a line-in mini jack cost? 22p?
What?
Yeah,
it's got to be designed by Apple California, though, hasn't it? So it's going to cost you about 300 quid.
Audio in, that jack would make it look ugly.
Oh, right.
They put a little white flap.
It's like a
it.
Second base button, isn't it?
What I don't get is that... shut up. Right, if they're selling...
If they're
selling to the iPod generation...
Can I get a rewind?
Sorry, you're making a point.
Sorry,
Ginger,
normally you do this to us.
Do I?
Ginger Lynn.
Yeah. It's similar to the iPod generation, yeah?
Right.
The iPod people, they're all kind of the high end of the consumer market. You know, they're high technologically aware and all that kind of thing. They've already got a computer. What are they going to use a second one for?
So are you saying that iPod buyers are technologically aware? I argue with that, totally.
It's pretty useless, though, without a computer, isn't it? An iPod.
I mean,
you need to get MP3s on there somehow.
What do you do? Put your vinyls on it.
You've got to have a computer to use an iPod.
Doesn't mean you're necessarily aware, does it?
But the fact of the matter is that, like Ax says, why on earth would you want to buy a separate computer just so you could use it with your iPod when you've already got your main machine?
I think the idea is you probably get rid of your original.
Can you plug ordinary commodity hardware into it?
If it's USB.
Oh, yeah, obviously.
There's no PCI or anything like that.
Because you never used to be able to with Apple stuff. You had to buy a special Apple monitor.
Yeah.
But if
it'll connect to a normal PC monitor.
Yeah, so you can plug ordinary VGA monitors.
You can plug in your ugly grey monitor into
lunchbox. What's the point of having this beautiful, smooth, round-edged, well-polished lunchbox with an Apple on, right? If you're then going to get the world's oldest monitor and then plug it in, and the keyboard that's got all the crumbs in it and pubic hair and whatnot. Why would you want to get that and plug it into your Mac Mini?
It's coming from the man with the yellow fit. But anyway, I was just going to...
Ooh, that was a bit hard. He's angry tonight, aren't you?
No, seriously.
I bought my finger because it's fast.
Seriously,
ass is fast.
Whacka, whacka, whacka.
My last point on the Mac Mini thing is I would possibly, if I wasn't into open source and everything, I would possibly buy one as an alternative to a Windows system if I was going to get a new machine. But if the open source stuff didn't exist. But I can get...
I don't understand why anyway. Imagine open source stuff didn't
exist. Why? Because I personally don't like the near monopoly of Microsoft. So if I could get an alternative in the form of a Mac Mini, which is relatively affordable, that'd be cool.
Let's get the monopoly with the hardware as well.
But exactly.
Yes, but I was saying, if there wasn't an open source alternative...
Nearly went supersonic again.
That argument doesn't work anyway.
Oh, well, shut up then. We'll talk about something
else. Because Walmart sell commodity PCs with... I think it's Red Hat on them, but it might be Susie.
Linspire, mate.
Linspire is exactly what it is.
The black pill of open source.
And Linspire costs money. These machines cost money, and they're doing it for about $350.
Okay.
They're about £200, right. And they're not selling out the fucking door.
People who listen to this show will have heard that I said if that didn't exist.
I'm really disappointed, actually, because one of my New Year's resolutions was not to get so worked up about Apple, and then they put that little fucking piece of shit out.
And you burst a blood vessel.
Several.
Bust a blood vessel, Bradshaw.
I'm catching Matt's anger. Rubbing
it off. It is contagious.
Should we move on?
Let's move on.
I caught it from a monkey.
Right.
IBM!
But it is, isn't it? But it is!
Do you want to shout any louder, Matt?
Man, Iceland it does!
Anyway,
should we leave a gap, maybe?
No, fuck that shit. Yeah. Go with the IBM thing.
They're open sourcing everything, aren't they?
No, basically what's happening is... would that it were, Aid. The truth of the matter is that they're opening...
They're better than Apple, aren't they?
I would say so. They're opening...
They're opening what?
500 clams. 500 patents.
500 clams.
They're opening 500 patents for use by, I think, the open source community. But they're keeping the patent so they don't come... a cropper like the man who invented the sulfur-headed match. Because what he said was, this be an invention for the world, I don't want to patent it. And then someone else patented it, and he died a pauper.
Matt, how do you know about the match?
I saw a documentary about it once.
Matt, did you research it to look clever?
No.
The thing that scares me is you didn't research it, did you just knew it?
Yeah. I just knew it.
Wow. Let me get it straight. They're open sourcing it, but they're keeping the patent.
They've kind of released...
Explain that to me. I don't get that.
They've released the patent so it can be used without paying them any patent rights.
Right.
But if they just said, we're going to like abandon our patent on this, then someone else will snap it up and patent it.
Oh, got you. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So they're keeping on like the just so someone else didn't snap it up. Exactly.
You should
like
have done that.
I need to pay attention.
That would be why Matt told the story.
Bald
idiot that you are. Listen.
I thought he was talking about marketing and just ignored it.
or Macintosh is or something.
He said Mac.
You thought you said Mac, presumably.
No, I didn't burst any more blood vessels.
I think it's pretty cool, apart from the fact that they've opened up 500 patents out of their library of about 100 million billion gajillion.
I think it's 44,000 that they've got, which is
bullshit.
What do we
way
think?
44,000 is what ZDNet said. Okay.
Question. Why do we think they've done that? What's their motivation?
Because they're good guys.
PR.
I'd like to believe that.
If they were good guys, they'd open all their fucking patents.
Let's think about this. What happened recently?
Christmas.
Because it's Christmas. Now, I'll be honest with you, I don't know what Jono's point is going to be. But I'll bet it's not because it was Christmas.
You are stupid, aren't you, Uncle?
Or maybe it's just a present from IBM to the world in a big piece of ribbon.
No, it'd be 500 little presents, all gift wrapped to little bows.
So what else happened recently?
So hang on.
12th night.
Right, okay. What happened recently was the software patents thing was thrown out in Europe, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And,
well, it was sent back to be reconsidered.
Yeah, which they're going to...
Thank Poland.info.
Thank Poland.
Did you all sign it, by the way?
Yes, I did.
And I responded to the confirmatory email confirming that it's actually me.
I said, Dobry dien, Poland.
They're sending flowers as well. What's that about?
Maybe the guy's gay.
Maybe he just likes flowers. because he doesn't like software pants doesn't mean that he doesn't like flowers.
Anyway, what?
Well, to get quite so angry.
I can't imagine there's any of our listeners who don't know about this already, but go to thankpoland.info and sign your name.
And make sure that bloke gets a large stalk. So anyway.
Some pansies.
They throw the software pants thing out, right? They throw the software pants thing out, and IBM come out with this press announcement. Because, you know, they're IBM and they want to be liked by everybody.
You think they might be connected?
You're so bitter.
Of course they're connected.
Now, you see, I...
Of course they're connected. Nothing.
You're bitter and cynical.
I would think they were connected apart from the fact that 75% of the Lug Radio team didn't realise they were connected. So if it was a brilliant PR body blow, then it wasn't quite as brilliant as IBM think it is.
Yeah. I was just thinking about how unintelligent we all actually are. I'm not going to sort of say who's the worst, who's the thickest.
I'm not even... Fuck off!
Everyone looks at
on-call bald.
I think with that much baldness, he must have burnt away the hair with intelligence.
Uncle Festy.
I think unfortunately he's burnt away the hair with patented matches and not with intelligence.
So, what ramifications do you think this is going to set a standard? Do you think more people are going to do this?
No.
Of course they're not.
IBM are the biggest patent holders in the world.
You're very bitter.
I'm not bitter.
You do look... The veins are pumping.
No, that's just wishful thinking. No.
I'm looking at his head right now, and I can't see the veins.
He's got his zip done up.
I can't imagine that any other companies could look at IBM and go, well, bugger me, IBM have done it. I suppose we better give away some of our patents as well.
You kind of could see that happening.
Yeah, no one's going to do that.
I think it is an interesting question why companies do things like this. And I mean, one thing I'd
say... Don't say M.
I was going to say, because they need to market their patents.
One thing I'd like to look into in a future episode is the business case for open source. Why do companies voluntarily open source? And let's not answer it and try and answer it now, but just why do
you're talking about the marketing special, aren't you?
No, I'm not. I'm talking about the business case for open source special.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just wonder why companies voluntarily open source the stuff, because you can understand why, say, Linspire, for example, have, or let's say... Apple with Darwin. The reason they've taken an open source bit of software is because they got a load of source code for free. But
what was that series where the dolphin was called Darwin and it could talk?
Flipper.
No.
Skippy the kangaroo.
It was like one of the sci-fi things.
No dolphins in that, as I recall.
Skippy in a submarine
swimming there through the Australian.
Too much tuna fishing, obviously. So the thing is, right?
What program with Darwin as a dolphin.
It was set in a submarine, and they had this dolphin.
A dolphin in a submarine.
Oh yeah, I remember that. They had a maglev railway as well under the water. It's called Deep Sea. I
Blues?
Or something like that. Deep Sea 2000 or something. If you know the answer, email show at loveradio.org.
I get a picture of that dolphin with a thing strapped on its back.
Anyway, Matt was making a point.
Yeah, but I think we should look into it in future. You know, why do companies open source their software when they don't necessarily have to do it just to get source code in the first place?
Yes, I think that. I think
Sequest DSV.
That's the chap. Yeah.
So, mighty brain of ACK word on it for a bit, and I got there.
You know, we should have some kind of the underwater world quiz, really, shouldn't we?
Hey, that's a brilliant idea that I had.
I believe
that's
I had it.
Let's talk about that in the intro or the outro.
Yeah, but,
well, we couldn't talk about the intro because
we've already done the intro. Yeah, we've already done the intro.
Attention. Or the intro to another show, you know.
So let's swiftly move on and pretend that this never happened.
Okay.
Okay, it's the end of the show. Oh. We've talked about a few things this time. We talked about Iron Maiden. Yeah, we did talk about Iron Maiden.
They're
a
fantastic band.
We talked about IBM.
Yes.
Both of those begin with I, by the way.
How mysterious.
We talked about Apple and their obsession with the letter I.
I'm actually
getting quite fucking scared, man.
Yeah. What about Mark Shuttleworth?
Who was he?
you may recall.
Oh, yeah, that guy, yeah.
Maybe we're all going, he's the I Mark. I agree with you. I really do.
Stop it.
Yeah.
He was a good bloke.
And Son.
Very good bloke.
Thanks very much for coming
Son.
On.
We talked a little bit about marketing.
Who open sourced iPlanet?
And I didn't feel like killing Matt.
Yeah.
You did feel like killing Matt?
No, I didn't.
Oh, you didn't? Okay, fair enough. Can we kill Matt? Can we kill you?
You might as well.
Can we kill you on air?
Is it still illegal if you kill someone and they consent to it?
Yes. Yeah, yeah. But if you eat them afterwards, it's okay.
If you eat them afterwards?
No, no.
I can't say that.
Whereas if you eat them beforehand, it's criminal offence.
Anyway, that's kind of digressing somewhat.
Somewhat. We never do. We know homicidal cannibalism. So, from you know, Sun open sourcing iPlanet, it's a clear connection there in my mind.
So, it's been an interesting show.
You know, we should do more interviews.
We should.
We should get the voiceover IP thing working. This is the year of voiceover IP. We will do more interviews
Hang
this
on,
year.
Is this the year of voiceover IP, kind of general, or is it the year of voiceover IP for Lug Radio?
Both of the above.
Right. I just want to, before I forget, I want to mention something, the Lug Radio pub quiz.
Yes.
Now, the way this is going to work, we've had a chat between us all, or at least we will do after we've recorded this workout, it's all going to work. basically, what we're going to do is we're going to have teams come on, and it's up to you out there, guys, if you're in your lug or wherever you are, to make up a team of three or four people.
Yep.
We'll decide once we discuss it after the show.
Can I just make a point? Yeah. We discussed it before you arrived, Matt. We think it should be five people.
Because you were late.
Yeah.
Five people?
No, again. No, four people, five teams.
We decided it's going to be in sort of a Dave Lee Travis style.
Oh, no, that's right. Yeah. Sorry. Five teams. We're thinking a minimum of five teams.
Those of you who are old enough and sad enough to remember listening to David Lee Travis's darts quiz on Radio 1...
Can we have the sound effects as well?
That's the kind of format we're looking for. Apart from, we may not rip off Radio 1's copyrighted sound effects.
Nah, we will.
So, minimum of five teams and maybe four people in each team.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, basically,
the number of people in a team...
three or if you've got five, it's not that big a deal. But don't turn up with a team with 18 or anything.
Yeah.
No, because we will send a monitor to find out.
So, one team a week. One team every fortnight, should I say.
And what will happen is we'll ask questions over the phone. You'll have a chance to go through different rounds covering different subjects, but mostly to do with open source and stuff like that. We'll give you full details, but get your team together now, whether it's in your lug or whatever. You'll ring us up. We'll talk to you over the phone
company?
On it.
Why are you moving your hand around, by the way?
Because I like touching your knee like that. So we'll get you on. You'll do the quiz. The winners will go head-to-head, we hope, at Lug Radio Live. And we'll give you a really shit trophy if you win.
Yes. Alarmingly shit trophy. But mail us at show@lugradio.org to show us interest.
Yep.
Yeah, please do mail us. And we promise we'll read the email this time. show@lugradio.org. Get into the quiz, please, because it's going to be so cool.
It's going to be good. And we want to do things like this. It's always fun. One other thing I'd like to say is we're going to make an active effort now to read emails and read out some emails in the show. I think it'd be good to read out some emails, read what people think, but be inventive with your emails. If you want it to be read out in the show, be inventive, be descriptive,
You've
be
got
humorous.
To swear a lot.
And if you send an OGG file for us to play, make it bloody interesting, will you?
If you don't swear a lot in your email, then we might insert swear words. But
that was
a bit harsh.
That was a bit harsh, Matt.
No, because no one sent it as well.
Are we going to make a conscious effort to fix our RSS feed so that the iPod is out there?
Shut the fuck up. Yes, good. I'm going to make a conscious effort. to think about fixing the OS.
Are these our New Year's resolutions?
Put together a timetable during which I will think about fixing OS feed.
By the way, Bernardo sent us a...
Bruno, yeah.
Bruno.
Sorry, Bruno.
Bernardo, all right. Like Dr. Bernardo.
We had one from Bruno, but our email wasn't working at the time, so sorry, Bruno, yeah. We didn't get that. But
And unfortunately, after listening to it, it was really nice,
Is his
Bruno.
Name actually Bruno?
Yes.
Yeah, Bruno.
Doesn't he keep saying you keep calling me Bruno? When
no, he keeps saying you call me Bernardo. Oh,
it's
Dr. Bernardo.
Dr.
Yeah.
Bernardo.
His real name's Bruno Bord. Salut, Bruno. Je m'appelle Matthew.
We got your sound clip, Bruno, and it was nice to hear, but unfortunately, it was a bit too long as well. When we get a sound clip, we can only, due to the amount of stuff we've got to get into a show, we can't really have any sound clips longer than around
thing with your hand,
around 20 seconds.
Yeah, so
anything, he's got to keep it preferably about,
guys,
10 seconds.
And if you want to write some jingles, send them in. We probably won't play them, but you know, we'll laugh at you.
You have
if
no problem keeping it down to 20 seconds, do you?
Yeah,
that's what Susan told me.
You're incredibly humorous.
No, he has trouble keeping it up to 20 seconds.
Ah, oh, you're all funny. So it's been an interesting show, a show at lugradio.org.
forums.lugradio.org. Thanks to Trig, thanks to our mirrors.
Oh, and clan.lugradio.org. They're all getting together and forming internet gaming team.
And they're going to take over the world,
happen, by the way.
Yeah.
So it's Lug Radio Live.
Is paintball still going to happen?
Yes. John's going to do the Lug paintball.
Talking of Lug Radio Live, if you've got any ideas for what you want to happen at Lug Radio Live, then please send the show at lugradio.org and let us know what sort of speakers, what sort of events you want there, because we're planning it now.
Yeah. And by the way, the show might contain swearing.
Thanks for that, Aid.
Yeah.
Greetings, people.
Good evening.
Goodbye.